Hey, everybody. Welcome back to What's Going On in Banking podcast. I'm Ron Shevlin, Chief Research Officer at Cornerstone Advisors and author of the FinTech Snark Tank blog on Forbes. And today, it is my great pleasure to have Liz Wolverton, the Executive Vice President and Head of Consumer Banking and Brand Experience at Synovus with me. Liz is perennially ranked as one of the most powerful women in banking. And I've known Liz for a long time, so I am thrilled to finally have her on the podcast. Liz, thanks a lot for joining me today.
Thanks. Awesome to be here, Ron.
All right, Liz. So what we do here is we look at what some of the hot things, what's going on in banking. And I've got three topics that I hope to ask you about today and get your sense for, get your ideas on. And one of those is consumer behaviors and attitudes. You know, I think over the past few years, we've certainly seen how younger consumers are changing their banking habits. There's nothing new. They're not closing out accounts and switching things. They're just adding new accounts. They're expanding their use of fintech tools and technologies that interact with the accounts that they have. But if you look at what's happening right now, are there different newer consumer behaviors and attitudes that you're picking up on that might be more specific to either late 2023, 2024, or looking ahead? What are you kind of seeing from a consumer behavior and attitude perspective?
I mean, I think you kind of nailed it with some overall, you know, trends of what we're not seeing. I mean, I think it's kind of the in terms of some of the younger population, it's the silent attrition or, you know, money going away because they're creating new relationships and they're not completely abandoning the one with their current bank, but they certainly aren't growing it. You know, I've said for a couple of years now, and I think the trend has continued, that people are looking for more in terms of advise me, even at kind of the mass market level. We're used to that at the upper end of the scale, but really at a mass market level, do more than just give me a dashboard with my balances and give me a place to point and click to transfer money, but help me understand that in a different way. I mean, I think it's just a part of the environment today. I always use the Apple Watch example where it tells us when to breathe and takes our steps and tells us how many more we need to take. I think people just, you know, translate that over to my bank. Okay, you're showing me my balances. What do I need to do next? And so I do see that as not kind of bells and whistles anymore. It really is more table stakes. Advise me more than just tell me. And it permeates in different places. I think right now, it's not surprising that we're seeing that in terms of fraud. How to protect me, you know, better and make sure that the new features and functionality that you have, I'm not looking for the sexy stuff. I'm looking for the stuff that's going to make sure that that money's there the next time that I come back. So I do think that the fraud flavor is really influencing, you know, what people want to see in terms of capabilities right now within, you know, delivery.
Yeah. So a couple of things to kind of drill down that on. So how do you respond to that? Is it just bolting on another feature to the checking account and to the digital mobile, you know, the mobile app that, hey, we've got some protection capabilities for you? Or is this leading you to design new products and services that can actually help generate revenue for the bank? How are you addressing some of those new requirements or new requests?
No, just it's a little bit of everything. Some of it goes back to kind of 101 customer information. You know, do they understand the protection mechanisms in place today? Do they understand how paying attention to various alerts will help them? We, one of the things that we've done, so talk about a bolt-on, is we've added insights into our experience with a partnership. And what those insights do is they lift up your account behaviors in a different way beyond a dashboard. Did you notice this? Have you paid attention to that? We saw this go up. We saw the first time you did a Zelle transaction was today. And quite frankly, did you do that Zelle transaction? So it's more interactive. So that kind of thing is a bolt on. There's just general, like I said, education. When people walk into the branch, We try to make sure they're familiar with the capabilities that they may not have turned on today. And we're trying to distribute to our teams awareness about what a customer does and doesn't have and where they do and don't engage. So we'll know what specific opportunities. So it's not kind of a broad brush approach. But when Ron walks in, I see that Ron does not use, I see that Ron does not deposit his checks remotely. I would tell Ron that's probably a good thing to do in this day and age where your checks are, where checks are being manipulated. The other thing that we're doing though is we are looking at deeper product refinements to build into the core product. We're talking with partners that have advanced capabilities in terms of credit monitoring, credit protection, but going a step further and not to give away a competitive advantage, but not just the ability to do that for yourself, but the ability to potentially manage that for others in your family, even those who you don't live with, like aging parents who are very vulnerable. Those things could be differentiators within your core product, giving more of those protection services. So it's a little bit of education, it's a little bit of what we can do now, and a lot about how do we make sure that's fundamentally part of the value prop going forward.
So a couple of things that though this raises for me, Liz, is we've had PFM, personal financial management tools, out there for practically 20 years now. And I remember the story back in the early 2000s. Oh, this is going to deepen the relationship and it's going to create great engagement. But the reality is it never really progressed much beyond budgeting and expense categorization. So the insights that were produced, were things like, hey Liz, you spent a lot of money on beer this month, and I'm
I'm
sure
sure
most
speaking.
people looked at that and said, damn straight I did. I'm doing it intentionally. I know what I'm spending on beer. And it didn't change behavior. And it wasn't really insights that anybody didn't know. And so what I want to kind of ask you about is, how are these insights different and better than what we've seen for 20 years? And how are you helping it to drive behavioral change? And I think that's kind of the big bugaboo in the industry is it's great to be able to tell people, well, this is happening, that's happening. But for a lot of people, it's not rocket science to know that if they want their financial health to be better, they should be spending less and, changing certain behaviors that they don't want to change. So there's a lot in there. So unpack that any way you want.
I completely understand the question. And, we talk about it a lot in banking. A lot of what we do is commoditize, and a lot of what we do doesn't change, even in terms of helping people think about how to spend their money. It's sort of like helping people, be on a diet or get healthier. Some of the core fundamentals don't change. Well, I'm probably going down a bad path there because some of that's really changed recently. I don't know how much of that's going to stick. But, I do think there's a bit more sophistication in the science behind how some of those insights are derived. I do believe there's a bit more context to them. But I think it's less about that and more about how our infrastructure today potentially can help us be more persistent at scale. So, you can generate just a good old-fashioned DOS-based pie chart for somebody, but how does that become very active in terms of updating and then providing the next iteration of advice? How do I understand that, look, these things didn't motivate Liz, but maybe this will? And that's where I think some of the new technology comes into play, that I can't keep going at you with the same thing over and over again. How do I learn from our interactions and get smarter about motivating you? How do I know what things really emotionally move you? Money is emotional. And you and I both know it. There are emails that, now that I've been in marketing, I think I take a different eye to things anyway. But there are emails that I read because I'm just like, that's clever. And that really struck me in a way that these other 10 emails, didn't. So I'll actually maybe take it to the next step and open it up. And we are experimenting with some of that. We have had in market for about a year and a half now a new email marketing engine that for the first 6 months, we kind of guessed at how we thought people would interact with emails based on a certain tone, based on a certain, did we use illustration or did we use real photography? What was the subject line? Does Ron have FOMO or is Ron really straightforward? And after about 6 months, I was a believer in it, but not to the extent that I saw the results. When we flipped, I pictured somebody like in a room flipping this big switch after 6 months where it had ingested kind of the response and the cause and effect from our customers. And our response, our engagement with our emails went up over 50% after we turned on that optimization. So the difference is, we're doing some of the same things. We're using some of the same math. Some of it's better, but I think we're more persistent and we are differentiating and learning from those interactions to get better. So I think that's the difference. It's not a reinvention.
Are you using generative AI tools to help you actually create and craft the emails?
So we are using generative AI in parts of our creative studio today. We haven't taken that to the emails yet. The creative team would say, yes, please, thank you. And that's another stage of maturity that they're ready to get to. Because to the point I was making, it's hard to scale that if there's people every time having to craft four different iterations of an email about Zelle to get Ron interested. Is it going to be that, hey, Ron, everybody on your block is doing it. Why aren't you using Zelle? Or is it Ron, Zelle is safer? Like which are you going to? So it takes a lot of effort. We're not using the generative creative there, but we are using it in different places within our marketing department. It used to take somebody, gosh, a few hours to take an image that we wanted to put on a website and make it a certain size and make sure it had the certain features. Now you can plug that into an AI-based creative tool, and it will literally populate a new yard around the individual standing in the picture. That instead of having to search for 10 different pictures, that's the right picture. Here's the size I want. Now create a scene around it. So that's definitely been a step up for us, but we're not using it yet in mass in those emails.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's making you more efficient, if not more effective just yet. Good way to put it, or?
Right.
Okay. So before I lose the thread on the changing behaviors and attitudes, I got to share with you this belief I have that there are a lot of banks out there who think that anybody over the age of 60 or 65 is a technology idiot who doesn't know how to use a smartphone. And that all of us over the age of 60 are not online, don't know anything about it. And they seem to just think that it's only younger consumers who are, mobile digital users. Are you seeing changes in behaviors and attitudes among, the over 60 crowd, or at least maybe even the over 65? I'm not even sure where the baby boomer line is anymore. Clearly, definitely not over 65, because I'm a boomer and I'm not 65 yet. But what about the older consumers? Are you seeing the behavior and attitude changes there?
We do. It definitely has to be provoked differently. I think when I look at the younger generations, they seek it out. When I look at individuals like me, like 60s younger, younger and younger. I'm 50 now. So when I look at people, like me, there's some things we're going to adopt easily and some things we're a little more tepid about. And as you go up the scale, I think there's just more resistance. But I do think there's a point at which people get provoked. COVID provoked a lot of motivation of people into digital adoption. We certainly saw that very meaningfully in our digital adoption numbers. Events like fraud caused people to adopt things that they weren't adopting before. I have a small business that I frequent once a month for personal services, and that individual in that small business calls me anytime she has an issue, and she's had a couple of fraud issues, and she swore she would never use things like, bill pay. She would never use online accounting for certain things. When she was having to go to the post office inside to mail a check, she said, okay, I'm done with this. I've got to figure out how to do things differently. So I guess what I would say is, Yes, we see it. It admittedly, it is not as aggressive as it is in the younger generation. I do think events that are happening around banking where people used to believe that getting online was going to make me less secure, we're changing the thinking there where we can demonstrate, that online banking in some cases is much, more secure. It's kind of like saying it's safer to drive in a car than a plane. I think we all know by the numbers, it's not. It feels a little unsafe because you don't have control in some cases, but the numbers will play that out. So I think that's what we see. I love to use the generation. I had a 105-year-old grandmother that passed away just a couple of years ago, and her name was Ruby. So I use the Ruby analogy versus the Graham, which is my mother, versus the Graham, which is my daughter. And we do a lot of behavioral discussions based on those profiles. What I believe is don't spend a lot of time trying to convert the Rubies. They are going to be your smaller boss to call. You can try. But I still believe that my mother's generation, and they're even in their mid-70s, there's hope. But it takes a little bit of provoking to get them there.
Yeah, and I have to, I look at my mother who's coming up on 88 years old and doesn't mind saying that because she's proud that she's still kicking and doing what she's doing and at almost 88. But man, I can't even get her to use the iPad to do FaceTime with their great grandchildren now. But it isn't, you're right, you're never going to provoke her to do it. But I think the big opportunity here, Liz, is actually giving digital tools to the older consumers' children who are 50, 60 years old, maybe 40, to give them tools to help them manage their parents' financial lives. And I see companies like MyFlock down in Atlanta, a new digital tool called Charlie that has come out that is giving these tools. I think this is, I've said this before. I think the emerging generation of banking consumers are baby boomers, not Gen Zers. I don't think their needs are all that great. I think this the emerging new needs are among older consumers that, require new products and services that are digitally delivered, but they're not the actual hands-on user of it.
I think you're spot on in terms of motivating individuals in kind of an older generation to use the tools. If you can show them the benefits, then show them the benefit of one thing. It sparks this hunger to know more. It's just like when I gave my mom an iPhone and she didn't want to use it, and she learned two things, and now I laugh as I am on social media, monitoring all the time to make sure that she's staying off of certain things. So you can get people interested. That you're spot on that the capability that we're looking at right now is a layer on into our digital experience where I could monitor an appearance accounts. I would get the alerts along with them. And by the way, they're scared of alerts. They don't trust anything that's coming to them. But think about that side by side where I feel I move in that space more that I can say, this is real or this isn't. And you're learning together. I don't think a bank can do it on its own. I think they've got to exponentially use their client base with experiences like that to really permeate, some of that generationally. Because it's going to be somebody you trust. And yes, they trust their bank, but they probably trust their family member just a little bit more.
Which is funny because that's actually the source of a lot of fraud is the family members.
It
But
is.
let's not even go down that path. So I want to leave a minute or two for another really hot topic in banking right now, Liz, which is deposit gathering. And for you at Synovus, what's working for you? What have you seen that's not working?
Well, CD rates work really well, Ron. I kid. I mean, when we had the liquidity, run up in 2023, in all reality, that was most of the money movement, we saw. And you can look economically and say that made sense in terms of interest rates going up. You had a lot of people that had stockpiled cash and they were looking for places to, deploy it as interest rates were rising. But I think it gets, for us, we've had, really strong deposit performance even through the, I'm so tired of hearing about the term crisis, last regional bank crisis. There wasn't a regional bank crisis. We can argue that a different day, but we stay very strong, through that. And it's no magic. I mean, at the end of the day, it's making sure that you are staying very, very agile in terms of responding to, where the money is moving and making sure your value proposition stays strong. I mean, you can always have the superficial growth by just pumping, rates up, and we don't chase that. It's very hard to be disciplined. But we have a couple of relationship products that are kind of our bread and butter, and we make sure that we're constantly taking care of those people and that we're constantly reaching out to ask them about what they want to do next. And those things kind of fundamentally serve the purpose, for us.
All right, last question, Liz. Is deposit gathering still going to be a top priority at the end of the year?
Heck yeah, we want to grow. And
No, I mean, from an industry perspective, I'm thinking, you know what? This is going to pass. By the end of the year, I'm thinking, it's going to shift. Things are going to change.
no
We'll.
way. I think money, money moved into a lot of money moved into time-based instruments, and those time-based instruments are expiring. And so we're going to continue to see supreme amounts of money movement and throughout the rest of 2024 as those maturities happen and as people reposition. So the competition is going to be high, the money is going to be in motion, and I don't think it's going away.
Okay, I'm with you. I'll leave it at that. Liz Wolverton, EVP at Synovus. Thank you so much for being on. Everybody who's listening in, thanks for joining us. Hope you see us on another episode of What's Going On in Banking. I'm Ron Shovel. Thanks a lot, Liz.
Thanks.